Welcome to Across the Mic with Julie Otaku. I'm your host, Julie Otaku. This is a podcast about blackness and its many intersections ranging from politics to fashion, music to activism, academia to art, sex work to healthcare, and so on and so forth. Guest appearances from professionals in their respective fields will provide insight and unique perspectives to the issues discussed. Sit back, listen, laugh, think, and consider new perspectives as you join me across the mic. Joining me tonight is Ms. Verdell Jones. She is an amazing community leader, mother to two beautiful children, Marcus and Maya, wife to Mr. Jeremiah Jones, and just an all-around powerhouse. And I'm sure she will tell you her extensive list of organizations and different things she's got her hands in. Introducing Verdell Jones.
Thank you so much, Julio, for having me on your show. It is truly an honor, and I'm so excited to be here this evening. Thank you.
Honored to have you. Honored to have you.
So, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I want you to speak on some of the things you're involved in. Introduce yourself to the people. Let them sure. know who you are.
Sure. So I've been an educator for over 25 years. And, you know, I can't believe where the time has gone. I started off as a business teacher, and then I was a guidance counselor. And currently I am the district director of guidance and support services for the district that I work in.
District?
Plain Edge School District on Long Island.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So I've been there for, I think this is my 16th year. So I've been there for a considerable amount of time. And, you know, I love being an educator. I love sharing information with people. I think that you can't keep your gifts to yourself and you should share them with others. So one of the things that I wanted to do was share information with others and bring people that have an expertise in certain things to share. So I started a talk show called Conversations with Verdell Jones, and I've been doing that for the past, it's almost 6 years.
And
yeah, I know it doesn't even feel like it. And I've interviewed all types of individuals that really have an expertise in certain areas. And the main focus of the discussion, the conversation, is that people walk away with something that they may not have known. So I've been doing that for a long time. I love it. I love meeting people. I love connecting people. It's a passion of mine. Education is a passion of mine. The other things that I'm involved in is we just started a family show called Let's Kick It with the Joneses. And you mentioned I have two children.
Yep, I'm already subscribed to the channel.
Awesome. So it's myself, my husband, and our two children, and it's a family type of talk show. We sit around the kitchen table, so to speak, and just talk about everyday issues that we would normally talk about. We're just bringing it to the masses. So I've been really involved with that, and it's been a pleasure. And one of the ways that I actually met Julio was through my organization called Deli Teach Enterprises, and we hosted a poetry slam scholarship. And Julia was one of the contestants and brilliant at that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It also has an author component to it. I feel strongly about having authors be able to share their work with individuals. So in addition to the Poetry Slam scholarship, we also had authors participate, because I'm an author as well of a book called The Parent Agent, How to Represent Your Child and Get Them into the College of Their Choice. So that's just a little bit about me.
So guys, you heard the laundry list of accomplishments and different achievements in quite a relatively short amount of time. It feels like a lot of time has passed, but some people aren't able to accomplish such things over the course of a lifetime. So you are truly very well accomplished and a really decorated member of our community.
Thank
so
you.
It's very much appreciated.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
No problem at all. And with your talk show, Conversations with Verdell, what gave you the initiative to begin it? You said you wanted to have different kinds of experts
come in and share things so the audience could walk away with more information than they came in with. Mm. Was that born out of necessity, or you just saw there was a hole or like a space that needed to be filled and you felt you were the worthy candidate to, you know, create that space for people?
Great question. I think it's kind of twofold. One of the things that I like to share is my supervisor at the time had asked me to present on a topic that I went to a workshop and I told him all about this workshop. And he's like, okay, great. Why don't you present it at our next, professional development meeting? And I was a little reluctant because it did have to do with classroom type of learning, professional development. And I hadn't been in the classroom in so long. And that kind of sparked my interest because I got back into the classroom and I was teaching my peers, you know, about this new way of teaching, let's say. And that really got me thinking a little bit. So as I had that in the back of my head, I had a woman that I knew, a friend of mine, and she asked me to participate on her talk show. And long story short, I participated in her talk show. And then she asked me if I wanted to start a show. And I said, yeah, that would be great. And it dawned on me that being an educator, I do have a passion for sharing knowledge. So I go back to me being able to do this workshop with teachers and sharing what I learned. Mm-hmm. And I kind of translated that into having a talk show, sharing things that I've learned, but also bringing in experts in certain areas. So I have educators and psychologists and authors and business owners and filmmakers that, you know, come to the table and talk to people about, you know, just about different topics. And it has been so rewarding to take that educational focus that I have and translate that into a talk show. And that's really how I got started. It was really because of my passion as an educator to share information with people.
That's so awesome, because so often you see educators, once they're done, so to speak, they've retired, they kind of either become professors or they then, you know, enjoy their retired life. They kind of hang up their hats, so to speak. They're always going to be educators,
right?
Regardless.
Yes.
But they don't necessarily pursue it any further than they have over the tenure of their career. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you took what you had learned and you saw, this isn't really a position I ever exhaust, and you decided to channel that same energy through another medium, mm-hmm. is really, really impressive. And it's so appreciated because the knowledge you bring is evergreen. Mm-hmm. I've been audience to some of the conversations you've held, mm-hmm. and one of your recent ones was with the Young Hip Professionals, another organization.
Yes.
And that was on diversity, equity, and inclusion in education.
Right.
Now with the current social, I'm going to call it a social uprising, mm-hmm. and the whole revolution we're experiencing, have you noticed, it's hard to say with like Zoom and like hybrid learning and everything, but have you noticed at least amongst professionals, the conversation is shifting?
You know, those are difficult conversations to have, mm-hmm. in certain venues. So I think a lot of people are going to platforms like this to be able to share. Another organization I'm a part of is called Community Cultivators. And we've had so many discussions via online. And I think the online platform, you can get that message out to so many people. And I think there is a shift, but I will say in a traditional venue such as education, those conversations are, I would say, far and few between. Now, you would think because you're an educator, you would have those discussions, but they're kind of isolated. They're not to the masses. And I think being in a traditional, you know, profession, it makes it a little more difficult to have those conversations.
That's true. With the online platforms, you really get a chance to democratize information, mm-hmm. and to be able to present all these conversations and have them and host them without the bureaucracy, right. of, say, a yeah. school district, because the superintendent in my school district, I'm very good friends with him. He's told mm-hmm. me, you will never see something more political than the school system.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even politics, as we see the whole circus going mm-hmm. on with over in the White mm-hmm. House, it doesn't even hold a candle to local politics when it comes to school districts. So to harp on that a little bit, your experiences as an educator, what did you see as a student when you were coming up and then subvert or, you know, kind of break the cycle of some of the either toxic or harmful practices that you saw as a student? As an educator, what did you bring with you from your experiences that helped to inform how you treated your students and how you treated faculty and hosted conversations?
So I will say, earlier today, I had a conversation with a classmate from back in high school. And one of the things that I truly loved about where I grew up and the school that I went to was a very diverse school. I graduated from Central Islip High School in Long Island.
That's a blessing.
And it was a great diverse community. And we all, you know, got along and we all were on teams together. And there was a sense of the town or the school, the community, Central Islip, being a collective. And I think some of that, and the funny thing is a lot of the teachers that I had actually went to the school as well. Wow. Yeah, which was really nice. So they had, you know, they really had some stake in it because they were former students.
Yeah, that's ideal with any kind of, I think, civil service or public service position. Mm-hmm. I would really prefer that people who grew up in the community turn around and then served it or worked.
Yeah, and
so it's beautiful that you saw that kind of turnaround and you got to experience that.
Absolutely.
Well.
And so that kind of really framed my career in a sense that I, as a teacher, you know, as a teacher and as an administrator, I take it very personally because I did have such a strong connection within my own school, my own upbringing, that I really do take it personal. And I see each child as part, an extension of me. And I try to aim to make sure that they get what I would want my own children to get. And I've done that in both districts that I've worked with. And I think that really does have to do with my upbringing as, you know, being in the school system that I was in Central Islip. And you know, as a student, back in the day when I was a student, there weren't a lot of, like today, it's just so different. The politics you see so much more, even as a student, I mean, as a being in education as a profession, a professional, you see it, but as a student, kids see that too now. Back then, it wasn't
as
much.
Really starting to
bleed. Yeah, through. Back then, it wasn't as much. It really, really wasn't. So I have to navigate that now as a professional, as opposed to being a student, you know, back in the day.
Yeah, it's really peculiar because I could, when I was in high school, if I wanted, I could go on Facebook and join a Facebook group called Parents of South Huntington.
Exactly.
Students of South Huntington, class of XYZ, and then I get to see the discourse amongst community members and just be frankly very embarrassed that any of these people are allowed to raise children, let alone bring them up in the school district because of some of their
It's interesting because, you know, I think all districts have their own little Facebook pages and you see it. I've never been involved in one of those Facebook pages, even if my own children.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, right. Yeah. They're out of control.
You will want to move out of your community expeditiously because you'll go to the grocery store and see somebody and be like, I saw what you posted. You don't know that I saw it, but I saw
it's unbelievable. We hear so much stuff and you know, it makes you as an educator so like reluctant to do anything because there's a screenshot of an email you send or it's interesting how.
Yeah, because the magnifying glass is.
Absolutely. So you have to be careful. You really do. It could be misconstrued, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Man. And with your talk show, Let's Kick It with the Joneses, which I love, by the way.
Thank
any
you.
Kind of family-based conversation, roundtable, where you have such a strong family unit, everybody gets along, and it's just healthy conversations being had amongst adults. Of course, you have the respect of parent to child, but everybody's on the same even playing field as an adult before right. anything. So I really appreciate that. During the social uprising, mm-hmm. at its height, I want to say in like June, yes. July, you had hosted a conversation with your family about everything that was yeah. going on. How difficult was it as a Black mother with a Black husband and Black children? How difficult was it to not only be watching the news and seeing this play out, but then having to, you know, just turn around and be like, oh yeah, I'm also a Black person with a Black family, and now I have to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. How did that feel? And did you feel it was your obligation almost to have that conversation on a public forum so everybody feels like we're mm-hmm. experiencing this mm-hmm. collectively, not just mm-hmm. by ourselves?
Absolutely. That's a great point. When we decided to do the show on Black Lives Matter, we had attended some, you know, some rallies and, you know, participated in the movement and really felt strongly about it. And it was just something different with this during the summer that we really, can you hear me? Hello?
Oh, it reconnected. I just lost the last bit of things you said. Oh,
okay. I'll repeat it. I think what happened was, when we decided to do the show on Black Lives Matter, we had participated in some rallies and we had marched, and it felt so different than anything else. And we felt like we really had to, as a family, make a statement about it. And I also shared, I believe, in that show how I felt about having, you know, like you said, a Black son. And there were moments, and I remember when Trayvon Martin was killed. And the feeling that came over me was overwhelming, and I was just terrified. And there were moments when I could not even sleep at night because our son wasn't here. He wasn't living with us at the time. He was living in Brooklyn. And And I was terrified. I was very anxious, and it was a feeling that just weighed me down. So when everything that was going on in this summer, it really kind of motivated me to say things can change. And I think the conversation that we had with Black Lives Matter is we were able to just get our feelings out there and share with people, because we are a quote unquote, you know, normal middle-class Black family, and we're impacted by this. You know, we're all impacted by this. And I think that discussion is much needed, and the discussion needs to continue.
Indeed, I fully agree with you, because I personally started once everything was at a fever pitch, really, and I couldn't bear to just keep the conversations either within myself or keep resorting to talking about it with my family, because right. it had become such a mainstay
yeah.
in my family. Everybody's home. We're having right. dinner together, thank God, together mm-hmm. every single night. But in the background, you'd have CNN playing, and we're having these conversations about mortality, really, and mm-hmm. just my two little brothers, one of them's almost 13, the other one's 11, mm. and they're having to be an audience to this conversation and hear their older brother sound scared, their yeah. mom sound anxious, their right. dad sound like almost indifferent because he doesn't really know how to feel. Mm. And it was not the best time. Mm-hmm. So I took to social media as well, and I started speaking about it
right.
on my Instagram. And then eventually you just have to process that pain and hurt and channel the energy into something
yes, productive,
very much like you did
absolutely
with your exactly like you did with Let's Kick It with the Joneses, and spaces like that are so very important. And it's very much appreciated that you take the initiative. You took the initiative to begin that, because if not us,
then who? Absolutely. Great point. We have to. And I liked what you said. You're channeling it. You have to, because it can really wear you down. It can get you, you know, feeling defeated. And being able to have a space to kind of let that out and share is very helpful.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And with your community activism, because I think I could rightfully call you an activist, because in your own capacities, you very much partake in the advancement of the Black community and the quote unquote color community in. On Long Island, you participate with people who are in the NAACP, the minority millennials, the young hip professionals. What have you seen different between when you were a quote unquote millennial, you were in your 20s, mid to late 20s, watching what civil rights looked like at the time compared to what it is now? What is the shift that you've seen?
You know, that's interesting, because as a younger person, we had these different incidences that happened, and
it's not new.
It's not new, right? It's not new. But I don't think we saw it. We got angry, but I'm not sure we were as vocal as the young people nowadays. And there were pockets that were vocal, but it wasn't as many. There wasn't this big. It wasn't as organized, I guess you could say, and it was in pockets. So I would say that there has been a big shift, and I love my young people. I love my young people, because they are ready to take action and they're ready to stand up for what's right. And, you know, one of my friends had said that, you know, the millennials and the Gen Zs, you know, they have a certain privilege.
Very much so.
Right. So when they see things that they don't like, they're like, wait a minute, hey, this is not what's supposed to be going down. And they take that privilege and they use that privilege to create action, which is very interesting, because you would think, you know, they're privileged and they're spoiled and all that.
It would lead to complacency.
Right. But it doesn't, because they see the injustice and they want to act on it. And, you know, I tease, you know, our children, because I'm a Gen X. And Gen X's,
so are my parents.
Right. Nobody talks about Gen X. It's always baby boomers and millennials, you know.
Exactly. I think it's messed up, quite frankly.
Thank you.
Because you're very much in the fight with us today.
That's right. So, you know, and we lived a very, it's interesting. I love generational kind of talk. And, you know, we were, when the pandemic hit, we were teasing our kids. We said, we were good. We were latchkey kids. We stayed home and entertained ourselves. So we were okay.
Yeah, that's true. I do remember that.
We were fine. But to talk about that activism, I think our young people, like I said, I just love our young folks, and they're really taking a stand and being vocal and willing to take risk, you know, and that's good. And that's what we need. And I appreciate that. I think when I was younger, I don't know if I had the wherewithal to do that. And I think maybe it was lack of knowledge as far as how to organize and what to do. And I think that our young people are really taking advantage of that with the resources they have available.
That's very true. You raise a good point, because one of the major differences between our generations is access to information.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Where your generation would have had to maybe had a quality enough library where they could go and read up about this, maybe had access to television, like cable television that showed all the major channels, maybe lived in a school district that taught them enough to know certain things. Right. You were kind of out of luck if you didn't have those things.
Exactly.
But we have access to all everything. That. And
absolutely. Yep.
So it definitely behooves us to move forward with the most fire and the most passion, because we've seen the compounded efforts of your generation, the baby boomers, and everybody else behind us. We have the playbook.
Right.
So it would make no sense for us not to then enact same playbook, absolutely. To put it into action and to really start to move towards change.
Yeah, absolutely.
And none of what we do today would be possible without the work your generation and those who came before mm-hmm. us. Like, we stand on the shoulders yes. of giants. We can't ever claim 100% it was only us that did this. Mm-hmm. That's why whenever I hear, are you familiar with the saying, we aren't our ancestors?
Oh, I don't like that saying.
I'm not my ancestor. I don't like it. Because our ancestors were so much stronger than we could ever
be. You got that right.
So much stronger, so much more passionate. They were literally willing to die.
They were literally willing
to be mauled by mm-hmm. dogs, to be hosed by fire hydrants and all these yes. different things that some people are too uncomfortable
right.
to even fathom. They'll just put out a tweet and feel like they've done something. They'll go to a protest and be in the back and act like they did
that's
something.
Right.
You can't be that timid in your activism and not radical and then claim you're not your ancestor. But then again, it's the most truthful statement because you aren't your ancestor. You're not built from the same
that's
stuff.
Right.
You're really
yeah,
not.
Yeah, you're right. It's so true.
And I'm even willing to sit here and say I'm not my mm-hmm. ancestors because some of the risks that were made and some of the chances that were taken, I don't know if I'd be able to.
Right.
And I don't know if most of my peers would be able to do the same.
I totally agree. You're absolutely right.
So when we, and I'm going to transition now into a conversation about the upcoming, I want to say like 9 or 10 days, mm-hmm. very terrifying time. How do you feel when you hear young people say, oh, I'm not voting. Mm-hmm. I don't think anything's going to change. Politics is politics. We're just picking the lesser of two evils. So I don't want to, I'm not even going to do anything. I don't like this guy. I don't like that guy. How do you feel? Because you understand the privilege that they speak from when they can afford to say that. And you know the work. Mm-hmm. You've probably seen single-handedly some of the work that was done in order for us to vote mm-hmm. or have the choice not to
right.
vote. So how does that make you feel as somebody who has such an expansive platform, who is looking to grow and to just inform and educate? Mm-hmm. How does that make you
feel? It's upsetting. It really is. I, you know, you hear, you know, in the news lately, you hear of individuals who will say your vote doesn't matter, or like you said, the lesser of two evils. It's very upsetting because there is a clear choice. And
indeed.
To me, it comes from a place of ignorance because mm-hmm. you know what we're dealing with. You know what has happened in the last 3.5 years. You know how this country could change, or the worst of us comes to the top because of leadership. So for mm-hmm. you to make that kind of a statement, it means that you're not paying attention. You don't have... You're really not educating yourself on what's been going on. So, you know, you have like the Ice Cubes who are coming out and saying he's talking to both sides and all that. Where were you?
Where were you?
Exactly. So I think when I hear that, I would say educate yourself. Really know what you're dealing with. You know, your vote does matter. People died for the right to vote. All of the barriers that they're putting in place so you don't get to vote.
That should be
exactly.
Enough.
That should tell you something. That should tell you something. So it's upsetting. It's upsetting when I hear individuals say silly statements like that, because it does matter. And local politics matter too. It's just not.
On an immense
absolutely.
Level, people don't even
absolutely,
understand.
Absolutely. So educate yourself.
Most definitely. And it feels very condescending to hear from someone who is either not going to be greatly affected by the outcome of the election, or someone mm-hmm. who doesn't understand the harm done
right.
by their
right.
inaction. You might be complacent because you won't
that's
feel
right.
the immediate effects
right.
of the outcome. But there are people who are literally hanging on for dear life until 3 a.m., 4 a.m. of November
right.
4th.
Exactly.
to this, to so they know the fate of their life.
Yes,
like
absolutely.
Whether or not they're going to be able to stay in the country, whether or not they're going to have proper health care, whether or not they're going to be living in fear of nationalists and different like domestic terrorists essentially threatening
which
their
is
lives
the biggest the threat. Honestly. You know, it's that's one of the biggest threats. It's just, it's very upsetting. It's very, very upsetting that individuals don't, your vote does matter. It matters.
It very much does. And if you don't think it matters in your case, it matters for so many other people. We need to break out of the individualistic mindset of me, me, even to say that, oh, my decisions won't affect anybody, or me not voting doesn't make a difference. You are losing sight of the
people. Right. And it's the compassion for others. You know, we were watching, maybe it was even the debate. It's the compassion for others. So what if you don't know anybody that COVID, for example, that has been impacted by COVID? So what? You don't know anybody. Who cares? But there are 220,000 people that have died. Shouldn't you care about that? Shouldn't you care about the Black men who were killed? It might not be your brother, uncle, father, cousin, or whatever, but it's a human being that shouldn't have been killed.
That's one of the most heartbreaking parts, the fact that we can't empathize outside of ourselves. If the pain and harm isn't done locally or close enough to us to affect our daily lives.
Exactly. It's a lack of compassion for one another.
Man, it can really weigh you down. So on that note, how have you personally, through all your endeavors and all the different dealings you have, all these different platforms, how is Verdell, Ms. Jones, how are you taking care of you? How are you looking out for yourself to make sure you are able to continue fighting the good fight without losing all of your composure? Because it is a lot of emotional, physical, mental, and spiritual labor. How are you able to keep yourself grounded through all of
this? It's difficult. It's very difficult. You know, as in my capacity at my job, I am the individual who's in charge of COVID. So basically I named myself the COVID queen. So, so all things COVID, you know, whether it be, cause I supervise the nurses in my, and you know, at my job as well. And anything from sending out letters to community members to let them know we have a positive case, to speaking with my nurses on a daily basis so they can figure out what they need to do with the child because they may have symptoms or what have you, to creating things that we need to put in place to make sure that we're doing what we need to do and contact tracing and all of that. So it becomes a very difficult task to keep myself kind of grounded and healthy, because we all know that stress can impact you physically as well, not only emotionally, but physically as well. So it has been a struggle to kind of keep that focus. But one of the things that I go back to is my family. I have a very close relationship with my family, my kids, my husband, my parents, my brother, you know, and great friends. So that my family and the extended family really help me to focus on what I'm grateful for. So I think I always go back to that. So my self-care has to do with being with my family and just loving on my family and just existing. My home is a place of comfort. And I think a lot of people kind of are really staying shuttered in their homes because it is a place of comfort. And that's what I do to get by.
I'm so glad you have a personal self-care routine and, you know, at least safeguard against all the ugliness and toxicity of the world, because whether or not regardless of whether this COVID pandemic was going on or the mm-hmm. social uprising was at a fever pitch, you are still a Black woman mm-hmm. in America. So you need to have some form of routine or self-care to begin with,
right?
Just to get
right.
by.
Absolutely.
And to keep going.
Absolutely. I think Black people in general have trauma and a kind of post-traumatic stress just Indeed. Because of the microaggressions we experience on a day-to-day basis. And because those microaggressions chip away at you on a daily basis. But then on top of that, you have everything else. All of the...
Yeah, it's a
exactly,
compound effect.
Exactly. So yes, as a Black woman, you have to stay grounded and you have to kind of hold on to something. And I love doing conversations with Adele Jones, focusing on things that make me happy. My family.
True. And things
absolutely.
You can control.
Right. Exactly.
Concrete, yes. tangible things absolutely. You can control. Things that bring
exactly.
you fulfillment.
Exactly.
Because it is very easy to go out into the world, find an employer, mm-hmm. work for them, and have somebody who can tell you whether or not you
right.
did a good job, and have
That's
your
true.
Worth be determined by your productivity and
Absolutely.
What you put out.
Absolutely.
But with you, you will always feel fulfilled if you are doing what feels right with your spirit. And if you believe mm-hmm. you are doing the best you can.
Powerful. I love that. You're right.
So, thank you. One of the perks of this pandemic is that a lot of us have been mm-hmm. home. And we've had yeah. time to think within ourselves right. and with each other. So we've been sharing with each other all our different thoughts that we might not have voiced before this. And one of the mm-hmm. things I've come away with from the social media like atmosphere I've built for myself, which is a whole other thing. You need to make sure you have a very clean, safe, and kind social media mm-hmm. atmosphere to exist in. Otherwise, ugly
oh,
things
yeah.
will break through
right.
every single time. One of the things I've learned is you do not need to constantly be at work to be mm. worth something. You don't need to constantly be producing to find value or to mm-hmm. be valued. Just being is
right.
enough. If you're having a lazy day and you don't feel like you can do anything or you don't feel like you want to do anything, everything just feels super agonizing and hard to do and arduous,
yeah.
take a day to yourself.
That
the world
it sure
will keep
will.
On spinning. The clock will keep on ticking. And the world
That's
will be
right.
there for you
That's
tomorrow
right.
anyway. So don't weigh yourself down and start to feel like you're not doing enough because others are definitely putting
mm-hmm.
in the work. You taking a pause to take care of you
is okay.
Is not
yeah,
wrong.
That...
Do not let capitalism
right.
fool you. You don't need to be working
right.
at all times. We're not built for that. We aren't built for that. There's a reason why robots
right.
play some jobs.
I think that's difficult. That's so difficult for people to understand. It really is. I struggle with that often as, you know, being in the position I am at my job, it's very difficult to shut off, mm-hmm. you know, but it is definitely
yeah.
needed. Absolutely.
And I think that also has to be not only just a social conversation amongst the people and
uh-huh.
the employees, the employers yes. have to recognize that as well. Because these companies and corporations, while they are pushed by margins and bottom lines, they are
uh-huh.
run by human beings. So you can hope, you could think, you could dream that maybe they can find it in their $100 wrapped hearts, their hardened
yeah.
by cash and bottom line and equity hearts, that their employees might need a break, and that isn't just the 30 minutes you might give them
right.
on their 8-hour shift. It might not just be the maybe 1 week vacation you give them out of the whole 52
mm-hmm,
weeks
mm-hmm.
of a year. It might be something more, and maybe like a rethinking of what the work
yeah.
day looks like. COVID
yeah.
has shown us that the whole concept of a workspace or an office is just a communal space for people to really interact and engage with people
right.
outside of their homes. It's not 100%
right.
necessary for
yeah.
every single field.
Right.
So I'm hoping out of COVID, we really start to rethink these things about each other and how we
absolutely
function as a society.
I think COVID has really showed us that, and I think industry is going to have to make that shift.
Yeah, luckily with Twitter, the CEO, he's actually made it possible for all of his employees to work online.
Yeah,
if I remember correctly, all of them are able to work remote. Online. It's remote. Right. They don't need an office space. And now all of these office spaces are opened up. They're vacant. What could you possibly do with all this new land? Oh, I have an idea. Don't develop it and make another skyscraper. Don't turn it into another mall. Housing. Maybe create housing for the homeless or people who don't have homes. And just, you know, serve people without the intent of a bottom line. It's just...
Reimagine, you know?
That's so true. If we're ever to have revolution and real growth, we need people with the imaginations to create these spaces to at least think of them. And then we also need investors who can then bring them to fruition. As soon as we close that gap and the money meets the ideas and the empathy is baked into the program and the blueprint, we will have
so off to the races. I mean, it makes sense.
It's so logical. It almost doesn't make sense. It's so in your face that you miss it. Britta, I am so thankful that you have been here to speak with me, to speak about your platform, and just share your insight, because you are in Africa. We have the concept of the griot, which is somebody who carries stories and knowledge by word of mouth and then just dispels it and transfuses it to everybody else. And you are definitely a griot of our community. You are very much appreciated. You are basically like a walking library. You're a fountain of information.
I appreciate that. You're a
fountain. No problem. It's just the truth. You're a fountain of information and knowledge, and it is so greatly appreciated. For all the little Black girls that I'm hoping will tune into this podcast and the Black women that will tune into this podcast, what words of advice would you give to them in this phase of your life? What advice would you give to them that would apply to either all of them or would target the younger demographic, the 20-somethings, the millennials, and then even fellow Gen Xers? What words of advice would you give to
you know, a cliche would be live your dreams. I don't think that when I was a little girl that, you know, I didn't really have that concept of live your dreams, but I knew that I wanted to live my life a certain way. And I had a plan in my mind on how to get there. So my advice to women would be, have an idea, have a vision of how you want your life to be, and go after it. But you have to have a plan. I'm a big believer in having a plan and laying it out. And then there's certain benchmarks along the way to help you reach your ultimate goal. You might not get to the pinnacle, but along the way, you will have awesome experiences in just getting there, because each journey or each step along the way in your journey, there's always something that you're going to learn and you're always going to grow. Even though there's a lot of bumps in the road, all of those experiences will make you grow as a person. I'm like a, you know, Maslow's hierarchy, and you know, there's your basic need, but the top is self-actualization. When you can be in a space where you're okay with yourself, you have done what you wanted to do, you have helped as many people as you could help. That's to me is the ultimate. And I think you just need to really focus on what it is you want your life to look like and achieve those little goals along the way, and don't get discouraged by the bumps and bruises. Look at them as a lesson.
That is incredible and truly applicable to every single person across all of those demographics. Once again, Verdell, thank you so much. Now is your time to plug any of your current organizations, your projects. If you have anybody you would like to share, the floor is yours.
Anything you awesome. Going, thank you so much, yours. Julio. You are an no exceptional problem. Young man, as I shared with you earlier today. I just think you're wonderful. And I'm so thank proud you. Of the work that you're doing. And I wish you continued success. You know, I have a show called Conversations with Verdell Jones, as we had mentioned before. And people can follow my YouTube channel, Conversations with Verdell Jones. And I also have a show with my family, Let's Kick It with the Joneses. And that's also on YouTube. You could subscribe there. You can go to RudeRangers.com as well to see all of our past episodes. We're going to be putting our YouTube channel, we're relaunching it and we're making it, you know, super cool. So you can check that out. And I love doing the show with my kids. It's so much fun. And my husband, it's a great time. And we do all the editing and, you know, the recording and all of that. So it is a lot of fun. And so I have also newly announced, I am the board member for an organization called Ignite Worldwide. And thank you. So I'm so excited to be a part of this organization. And what they do is they get STEM education into the hands of young women of color, underrepresented individuals within the STEM field. So there's organizations like Google and Microsoft, women in these areas that speak to these young women to let them know what's out there and available to them. So I'm very excited to be involved with that. And I will say that, you know, I've been in the talk show realm for a good little time. And I just love to hear from people who appreciate what we're doing on each of those shows. So I'm always willing to, you know, to hear from people, and I want to hear from people. So you can also go to my website, verdelljones.com, and, you know, you can find out all the information about what's going on with me.
Beautiful. Once again, I cannot thank you enough. Everybody, this has been Verdell Jones. I'm your host, Julio Taku. Thank you for tuning in. You could have been anywhere listening to anything in the world right now, but you're here listening to us, and I thank you for that. Much.
Thank you for tuning in today. Your listenership and support are greatly appreciated. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to use the voice message feature on the Anchor app or message me on social media. You could be listening to anything in the world right now, but you're here listening to me, and I appreciate you. Until next time, this has been Across the Mic with Julio Taku. Godspeed.